You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Wednesday, March 22nd. Opening day is right around the corner, and we're talking Cardinals baseball today with Jennifer Langosch. Jen, thank you as always for the time. And Jen, as we were just discussing, it's that time of year. It's, you know, it's not dog days of summer. It's the spring training equivalent of that, where you just kind of run out of things to talk about and write about and think about, because it's all just a countdown to opening day now. And, you know, most position battles have been won or claimed, you know, a few up in the air. But we want to just kind of spice things up a little bit today on this week's edition of the Cardinals podcast and talk about some spring training superlatives, if you will. And we'll also talk about the upcoming World Baseball Classic title game between the U.S. and Puerto Rico, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But for right now, like I said, some spring training superlatives, just kind of running down how things have gone so far in Cardinals camp. And Jen, let's start here. It seems like that in every camp, every spring, there seems to be a bromance that develops. It could be between, you know, two up-and-comers, two grizzled veterans, or a veteran that might take a young guy under his wing. So when you look at the makeup of this Cardinals camp, what is the spring training bromance that has blossomed before your eyes?
Well, Matt, there's nothing that will compare to last year's bromance with Brandon Moss and Jed Jerko. So I'll start there, that we don't reach that level this year. But we've got a couple brewing here. I mean, one of them, interestingly enough, a bromance that goes back many, many years, Matt Carpenter and Chad Huffman, a non-roster invitee to camp, actually played baseball together as little leaguers, as high schoolers, as college teammates, and are now in this first together in spring training camp for the first time. So that's been a fun friendship to watch blossom. And again, that's a relationship that goes back a long way. The other one that's been fun to watch, too, and it's a competitive bromance of sorts, is reliever Matt Bowman and Jed Jerko. Now, these two guys, you'll find them most mornings on the ping pong table. Jed Jerko is kind of the backboard. Matt Bowman is the aggressor. But they've had some very intense ping pong matches, a lot going on there. So they've spent a lot of quality time together in the clubhouse.
Yeah, now, these ping pong matches are players, you know, placing bets, so to speak. I know that's not a term we want to explore with baseball and spring training clubhouses. But how much of a crowd are they drawing for these matches?
Yeah, you know, it's so much so that the manager will often be kind of walking past the clubhouse and he'll stop and just, you know, gaze in awe. These guys are really, really good. Now, we've seen a lot of players, you know, take their turns at the ping pong table. They're okay. They can, you know, keep a rally going forever. You watch Matt Bowman play and he is dripping in sweat. And then you watch Jed Jerko and he looks like he hasn't broken a sweat at all as he just gets everything back. So, yeah, friendly wagers there. A lot of kind of talk within the clubhouse about who might be better than the other. They didn't put together an official tournament of sorts, but I would guess we're going to see you guys continue to play during the season, because they do happen to have a ping pong table also back at Busch Stadium.
Now, I know that's you know, mere mortals and amateurs like you and I, when it comes to this sport, we will refer to it as ping pong, but the people that take it seriously will call it table tennis. So what's the terminology here?
They call it ping pong.
Really? But yeah, they do.
But you're right. I mean, maybe they should pick up table tennis, since they're taking it obviously very, very seriously. You know, there's some days, I mean, these guys do this, they play for an hour in the morning and look utterly exhausted by the end of it. But they're still able to go out, get their work done, pitching a game, hitting a game, whatever it may be, and then come back and do it again the next day.
Maybe there's some Olympic medals in their future. You never know. Great way to start out, Jen. So let's transition to this. I know that in every camp, there's always a minor league player, whether it's a guy that's a top prospect or a guy that's not quite on people's radars yet. They always turn heads. They have a dynamite spring, and they get people thinking like, hey, you know, this guy, whether, again, he's come out of nowhere or he's somebody that's been on the radar for some time, definitely turns heads with their performance. Who might that guy be for the Cards?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the long-term Sandy Alcantara, who we saw this spring, I mean, this is a really lanky, tall, right-handed pitcher who can seemingly get on the mound and throw 100 and 101 with absolutely no effort. This is a guy to watch this year, and somebody who opened a lot of eyes here, particularly because not only does he showcase that fastball, but what he showed this spring is that he has some secondary pitches to go along with that as well. Now, they're still developing. He's still developing. I would imagine he's going to start the year in High A Palm Beach, but what we've seen with the Cardinals and these type of electric pitchers before is that they're not afraid to push them up and even push them all the way up into the majors as a reliever, maybe first off, to get that first taste. So I would say Sandy Alcantara has stood out. And then the other, of course, being Jose Martinez, who, you know, you talk about Alcantara as a top prospect. Then you look at a guy like Jose Martinez, who has spent 10 years in the minor leagues before he got an opportunity as a September call-up last year in St. Louis. He has had perhaps the best spring of probably anybody here, and he's put himself in position to make the opening day roster. I mean, I think back to a year ago, we kind of saw this happen with Jeremy Hazelbaker and what he was able to parlay a terrific March into. And, you know, Jose Martinez could be that guy this year, make the opening day roster, be a versatile defender, a good pitch hitter. And, you know, again, after somebody who spent so long toiling in the minor leagues, it's fun to watch him have that sort of success.
It's always remarkable. There's one guy every single year that you never see coming. It doesn't matter what the team is, what year it is. And this year it is that guy for the Cardinals. And like you said, what a great story it would be to see him on the opening day roster after a decade toiling in the minor leagues. We will certainly see. Jen, of course, as we all know, you know, the days and the nights tend to blend together in spring training as you try to just do something to break up the monotony of these long days and long nights and the workouts and the games and so on and so forth. So what have the Cardinals done to kind of, you know, keep things lighthearted and keep guys engaged with some off-field activities?
Yeah, so last night, actually, Dexter Fowler, it was his birthday today, so in an early celebration of his birthday, took some of his teammates down to Miami. They went to a Miami Heat game, which everybody seemed to enjoy a lot. But, you know, I mean, I think the one activity that stood out to me this spring happened early in camp when the entire clubhouse loaded up onto a bus in uniform and showed up in an escape room. And these guys split up into teams, into these escape rooms, had to work together to solve clues to get out. And you know, the whole experience got some rave reviews from the players afterwards, how much they enjoyed the challenge of it, but also getting to know each other. And I think that was really the purpose of the activity was, hey, let's put together people, players that maybe would not, you know, otherwise associate with each other all that much. They're on different sides of the clubhouse. They play different positions at different levels. Get to know each other as teammates, have to work together through a little bit of stress and adversity and see if you can come out better on the end. So that's, it's been interesting, too, that the Cardinals did this very early on in camp. And I have since seen other teams, I believe the Angels and the Pirates being two of those, have also had players go together to escape rooms since then. So maybe started a little bit of a new fad.
And I'm having a flash of deja vu because about a half hour ago, I talked to your colleague, Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter, and he said the exact same thing. He said that was the team building activity that the Pirates had with these escape rooms, which he wasn't familiar with and some of the players weren't. But after they had that experience, they all loved it. And it seems like there's some similar feedback where the Cardinals are concerned. So maybe this is the new buzz thing amongst big league ball players, these escape rooms to create some bonding and some togetherness and to try to put together your problem-solving skills. So, like I said, maybe that's the new thing in baseball these days. Jen, when you look back at the spring training schedule, of course, as I said, all the games tend to blend together, and, you know, games really don't stand out from one another. But for whatever reason, has there been one game that maybe stood out a little bit from the rest or maybe a memorable performance for whatever reason?
Yeah, we haven't had a ton of standout games here. You know, Greg Garcia did hit it inside the park home run the other day, so you don't see that all that often, especially in spring training. But, you know, to me, I kind of think back to the very first spring training game this team had in late February. There had been so much buildup about Dexter Fowler. He was in the lineup that day, and it gave us an instant glimpse of the impact he can have on this team. He drew a walk in his first at-bat and then made his way around with a steal and an out and then a sacrifice fly from Matt Carpenter to score. The next time he was up, he drew another walk and Matt Carpenter comes up and he hits a home run. And I think it was just kind of a flash of what could be with a new look at the top of this lineup. And it gave the Cardinals a lot to be excited about with what Dexter can bring and what those guys right behind him can do offensively with him in the leadoff spot. So, you know, it's a game. It's actually a moment that some players still talk about it as kind of evidence of the changed look of this lineup. So probably more than anything else, that's what stood out to me.
Yeah, I know the Cardinals fans are very excited about the addition of Dexter Fowler, and I know that more than a few Cubs fans are saying that his loss has been a little underrated right now, and that when the season begins for as loaded as that Cubs team is, they're saying that his absence is going to be felt maybe a little more than Cubs fans are expecting, and to that end, I think Cardinals fans are going to be even more excited when they can see what Dexter Fowler can do over the course of 162 in his first year as a St. Louis Cardinal. And, Jen, one of the, you know, I guess fun things for me during spring training is that you always see, you know, the passionate fans of every team in the majors. There's always one guy that they kind of pick on a little bit based on a spring training performance or maybe lack thereof. They get worried about them, like, oh my God, they're not having a great spring. They're going to be a disaster this coming season. So based on social media feedback and, you know, questions to your inbox, who's that one guy right now for the Cardinals that fans are maybe getting unnecessarily worried about?
It's probably Adam Wainwright, and you remember we talked about this last week. Yep. You know, Adam came off a start in which he allowed 10 runs in an inning and two-thirds, and it was all around ugly. There's no getting around that. Walked four through two wild pitches. It was pretty terrible. There was very little good to come out of it, though Adam tried his best to find a few things. So, you know, that kind of leads to some irrational, oftentimes, concerns, despite the fact that Adam, leading up to that start, had pitched quite well this spring. We've talked about the development of the changeup. We've talked about the rediscovery of the curveball. But it's amazing how one clunker of a performance can kind of wipe all that from memory. So I think it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see Adam take the mound here tomorrow as he tries to bounce back from that ugly start against the Mets. And he'll have another start in spring before then, you know, getting into games that actually do count. But, yeah, a little bit of concern there. Certainly some of it related to last season and that Adam didn't live up to expectations last year. Concerns about, you know, he's a guy who's 35 years old now. Is he kind of over the hill in terms of baseball career and what he can be expected to do? But I've said this before, and I will continue to contend that I think Adam Wainwright knows himself so well and knows his stuff so well that he will get the most out of whatever he has on any given day.
And the beautiful thing is, if he goes out there tomorrow and gives up 9 runs, hey, it's an improvement. So, you know, Cardinals fans can hang their hat on that, but hopefully it was just a blip on the radar, and Mr. Wainwright is going to be A-OK heading into the 2017 season. And, Jen, I think I know the answer to this next one, but maybe you might surprise me. The newcomer on this team that you personally have enjoyed interacting with the most.
Yeah, it's got to be Dexter Fowler. Now, there's not too many newcomers to choose from around here. But Dexter, and I think maybe manager Mike Matheny described it best to me the other day when he said, you know, Dexter's really a chameleon, and he can get along with anybody of any background, of any sort. You know, he kind of erases the cliques that maybe emerge in clubhouses or just, you know, in interaction. So he's been fun to get to know. I mean, this is a guy who likes to be kind of the life of the party, always walks in with a smile. He brought music out onto the fields, as we talked about earlier in spring. So very intelligent guy, very informed when it comes to current events and news. So there's a lot there to like. And I think as Cardinal fans get to know Dexter as he's here for the next 5 seasons, they're really going to like having this guy as an ambassador for the city and also then see what he can bring on and off the field for this club.
Yeah, just a dynamite addition for this team. And like you said, easy answer there. It's got to be Dexter Fowler, the guy that not just yourself, but a lot of other people have enjoyed interacting with the most as he comes over from the Cubs in the offseason. And, Jen, to wrap up here, we're hours away from the championship game of the World Baseball Classic between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. And we've all seen what Yadi Molina has done at the plate, behind the plate. It's just some of the throws he's made, catching guys napping off of first base, tags at home plate, hitting home runs. The guy has done everything. It should be a dynamite game tonight. And for my money personally, I was a little bit lukewarm coming into the WBC, thinking, you know, I'll pay attention to it. I'm not going to get invested in it. I've done a 180 on that. I'm watching games not even involving the U.S. I'm really into it. I'm going to be watching every pitch tonight. How invested have you been? And give me a prediction for tonight's game.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you did. I mean, I feel like in World Baseball Classics past, I've kind of loosely watched or paid attention if I had little else to do. But it has been kind of like must-see TV this spring. I will say the only difficulty being down here on the East Coast where our days start usually before sunrise is these 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern time starts make it a little bit hard yep. to stay tuned into games. So I typically catch the first part and then have to catch up the next day on what happened at the end. But it's been fun to watch, and it's so fun to watch Yadi and the passion that he always has out there, and particularly in playing for his country. I mean, it's always been a really big deal for him to represent Puerto Rico, and you have to wonder there's going to be a little bit of a letdown coming back from that tournament back here to spring training. But it's fun also to get an opportunity to see other people maybe notice the things that we see in Yadi, watching him day in and day out. For others who don't get that opportunity, just the difference maker that he can be both behind the plate and at the plate. So I look forward to the game tonight. I probably would give the edge to Puerto Rico because Yadi seems to be able to do amazing things with a pitching staff of largely no-name guys. And I wouldn't bet against him on the biggest of stages.
Yeah, I'm with you. Of course, my heart's pulling for, you know, the U.S., but I think that Puerto Rico team is so deep and they're playing with so much emotion that I think they edged the U.S. tonight. But either way, I think we're in for a very entertaining ball game and a great way to cap what's been an amazing tournament, the 2017 World Baseball Classic. That's a great place to wrap this one up. Our thanks as always to you, Ms. Langosch. We will do it again next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, St. Louis Cardinals. It is Wednesday, March 22nd, and we're talking Pirates baseball today with Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter. Adam, thank you for the time as always. And Adam, as we were just discussing before I hit the record button, we're all a little sick and tired this time of year of talking about, you know, well, a lot of nothing, to be honest, because we're counting down the days until the meaningless spring training games are done. The real fun begins with the regular season. There's just it's a struggle right now to come up with compelling spring training content. It's something that we all fight through. So today, in light of that, some spring training superlatives. We're going to talk some World Baseball Classic 2 as we are hours away from the title game between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. And, of course, Andrew McCutchen has been a big part of the U.S.'s success. But leading up to that, like I said, some spring training superlatives. So here we go with the first one. This is one of my favorite questions I get to ask every year, whether it's two young guys or two veterans or maybe a mix of a veteran and a young guy. There always seems to be in every camp a spring training bromance that blossoms. So with the Pirates right now, what would that bromance be, do you think?
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Wade LeBlanc and Tyler Webb, who are ostensibly competing for the same bullpen spot. They sit right next to each other in the clubhouse. They locker together. They're both Southern guys, and they're talking pretty much all the time that we're available. The players are available in the clubhouse to the media. But the only correct answer to this question in the Pirates clubhouse is Trevor Williams and Stephen Brault. They're both, Southern California guys. They're competing for the same spot in the rotation. They were in AAA together last year. They are roommates. They were throwing partners in the offseason. They played catch, during the drill portion of spring training. That is definitely the Pirates' biggest bromance. If anybody follows either Stephen Brault or Trevor Williams on social media, you'll definitely get a sense of that, although Trevor Williams has actually given up social media for Lent, so you won't see it from his account. Stephen Brault has posted some really funny things about, the idea of the rotation competition, that they're really, hardcore against each other. But the reality is they're great friends. They are as close as probably any two people you'll find in baseball. Stephen Brault made a joke about, since they're in competition and they live together, that he set up their house like Home Alone, to try to get Williams out of the competition. They're two good guys, great with the media, great quotes, really accessible and, insightful in their answers, very smart, sharp guys. But they definitely get along. Really everybody in that sort of mix of young starters gets along great. Chad Kuhl, Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow, Brault and Williams, all really close friends. You can definitely see the friendship there. It's apparent, not, forced or put on or anything like that. But the closest of the two of them certainly would be Williams and Brault.
Now, Adam, it's funny you say that because I'm hearing from a lot of different reporters when I pose this question that the bromances seem to blossom between guys directly competing with one another for the same spot on the roster. Like I said, I've heard this from three or four different reporters for three or four different teams. Now, do you find that surprising?
No. I think it's probably, you spend the most time with the people in your position groups and with generally you come up with people of a similar age. And if you're at that similar point of your career, you're more likely to be competing for a spot with each other. I think a couple years ago in 2015, the answer to this question would have been Archimedes Caminero and Radames Lees. And they were fairly similar pitchers at that point coming into camp at a similar place, and they wound up in the bullpen in a relatively similar position for the Pirates in 2015. So I'm not terribly surprised by that. Hitters stay with hitters, pitchers stay with pitchers, starters with starters, relievers with relievers. So it does kind of make sense.
Now, Williams and or Brault may be the answer to this next question, which is it seems like every year, whether it's a guy who's a top prospect or a guy who's maybe not quite on the radar of many fans at this stage, but there's always someone amongst the minor leaguers that really turns heads and raises some eyebrows with what they do in spring training. Who would that guy be for the Pirates right now?
No, this one's pretty straightforward, too, and it's definitely Jose Osuna. He was added to the Pirates 40-man roster this offseason, so he's not technically a minor leaguer, but he's never played in the big league, so we're going to count him for this. he has hit the life out of the ball this spring. He's looked great at the plate. You know, he's making a really strong argument to be included on the opening day roster, especially since it seems like there will be an extra spot on the bench since Jung Ho Gang is still yet to report to spring training. That would open another spot on the bench. It's most likely going to go to Phil Gosselin, given his major league experience. But, you know, Ozuna is certainly making a strong argument for himself in that regard. The OPS right now, as of this off day, is something like 1.5, which is just absurd. It's a small sample size, of course, and he came into camp maybe better prepared than some because he played winter ball. You know, he's coming in a better place than somebody who's just, you know, starting to learn their swing again on, you know, the first day of spring training workouts. But he has opened a lot of eyes. Clint Hurdle went out of his way to say that he hasn't opened eyes within the Pirates organization. You know, they knew this was what Ozuna was, what he was capable of. So the defense is a work in progress for him, though, and that might be the difference between him making the opening day roster or not. But I think certainly the buzz in Pittsburgh right now has been about Jose Ozuna, a guy that not a lot of people had heard of before this spring, but has certainly captured a lot of attention down here in Bradenton.
Yeah, and like you said, it is a small sample size, but hey, 1.5 is better than 0.5, so it's, you know, you got that going for him, and maybe he ends up on the opening day roster for the Pirates here just weeks away. Adam, moving on, we've seen teams try to break up the monotony of spring training with, you know, some cool off-field activities, just something to get guys laughing and maybe like a team bonding activity. So in light of that, what have the Pirates done in that regard that's really stuck out to you?
Yeah, the Pirates have done a couple things like that, actually. They started with a cook-off. They called it Pirates Chopped. Shout out to the Food Network, which is in a similar market to or a similar office space to our own up there in Chelsea Market.
That's right.
They did that on the last day of spring training workouts. That was a fun, really fun competition. I think it got some of the guys into it, showed off some of the hidden culinary skills of some of the Pirates. They sent them to an escape room, which is not a concept I was terribly familiar with before this camp, but a lot of guys seem to really enjoy that. And then just the other day, they held kind of like a blow darts paintball competition outside on the training agility field at Lecom Park. So they're definitely breaking up the monotony. I think the chopped competition really stands out to me the most. I asked when the lineups were posted, they kind of broke the group into, you know, 15 separate lineups. Trying to get guys, you know, who might not have interacted otherwise in with each other. And I asked around the clubhouse who was the favorite, and pretty much everybody to a man said Gerrit Cole. One of his teammates said he was going to flambe something, which I thought was fun. They predicted he would, you know, make something with a red wine reduction. It really kind of gives an insight into these guys and what they're into off the field. And I think they all seem to enjoy that. A lot of good social media posts came out of that Pirates Chop competition.
Yeah, I bet. We know how talented Garrett is on the mound, but who knew the talent he had off the mound. So kudos to him, and job well done for Gerrit Cole. Adam, moving on here, you know, these games tend to blend together, you know, after a couple of weeks, especially in the later innings when you have guys out there that are very young and won't crack the major league roster for at least a couple of years to come. Nonetheless, I would think that at this point, for some game, for some reason, has to have stood out to you, again, for whatever reason. So what would that game be right now?
I'll give a couple. One is the Tyler Glasnow performance down in Sarasota. It was one of the Pirates' first games of the spring. He struck out 6 in 2 innings. It's not a game that you remember. It's certainly a performance. As far as games specifically, you would definitely say the Pirates game against the Dominican Republic. The exhibition game they played at Lecom Park, Gerrit Cole looked totally opening day ready. Neil Huntington said that was the best they've seen Cole in a long time. He threw 3 scoreless innings against that just absolutely star-studded lineup. And then we saw the potential of that same lineup later in the game when they put together a huge inning and stormed back to beat the Pirates. That one definitely stands out as well. And then in more of your typical spring game setting, there was a game the other day on Sunday where the Pirates played the Blue Jays, and it was the Pirates had a 1-run lead going into the 9th. Toronto, using a bunch of guys with no names on the back of their jerseys, stormed back for 4 runs in the top of the 9th, and the Pirates tied it with 3 runs in the bottom of the 9th, and the game ended in an 11-11 tie. It was basically a 4-hour game. It was memorable for a lot of reasons, some of them good, some of them bad, but that one stands out as a very quintessential spring training game, I think.
Yeah, you're never going to see an 11-11 tie unless there's a drastic rule change somewhere down the line. So to have that in spring training is something that sticks out in your mind for sure. Adam, as we come down the home stretch here, it's always, you know, fun to read the feedback and the anxiety of fans who say, oh, my God, this one player is, you know, they're just doing terrible in the spring. They're never going to get another base hit. They'll never record another out if it's a pitcher. And it's just fun to see because you can't take spring training numbers all that seriously, whether good or bad. So judging from that, who is the one player, maybe more than one, that based on fan reaction in your inbox and on social media, that Pirates fans are, quote-unquote, panicking or worried about right now?
Yeah, I think there's been some concern about closer Tony Watson just based off a couple rough outings in spring training. I'm not entirely sure that response is irrational given some of the struggles that he had last season at the beginning and end of the year. But ultimately, you know, again, you have to realize it's spring training and the numbers don't mean a ton. There was one game where he basically didn't throw any off-speed pitches, so he got hit around a little bit. So maybe not as much to worry about on the surface as it would seem. But the guy I would pick for this one is Josh Bell, first baseman. He got a little bit of a late start to the spring after February 1st knee surgery, and you know, he went hitless for a little while. He hasn't really pounded the ball around the ballpark. But again, this is spring training. This is a guy with an advanced feel for hitting. You know, people are talking about Ozuna, who I referenced earlier, replacing him at first base. That's just not realistic. Josh Bell is a very high ceiling player. He's got a lot of potential. He showed a lot of polish in his debut last season, so I don't think Josh Bell is a guy you need to worry about at this point of the spring.
Yeah, the lesson is always to fans, we love the passion, we love the enthusiasm, but on the same hand, calm down. You know, the games, when the games start, when they count, when it's for real, everybody will be just fine. Nothing to worry about. And Adam, one last spring training superlative of the newcomers on this Pirates team. Who was the one that you've enjoyed interacting with the most?
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit here because the Pirates don't have a ton of new faces. Daniel Hudson's been really nice to interact with. Phil Gosselin has been a stand-up guy in our dealings. But I'm going to go back to a guy they acquired in August and go with Ivan Nova. He's been an absolute blast around the clubhouse. You can tell how much everybody likes him. He's just really a pleasure to deal with. He comes in every morning and he says good morning to every single person he sees. And if you don't say good morning back to him, he wonders what's wrong. Nova has been a real pleasure to deal with from a media perspective, answering all the questions we have, you know, just joking around when the need be and answering serious questions when it comes time for that. You know, you can just tell how comfortable he is. It's something we talked about regarding his performance, but, you know, it really reflects in the clubhouse as well. He's just been an absolute blast to deal with. Maybe he was conditioned by the New York media market, and then he comes to Pittsburgh and he finds, oh, hey, there's only four people around my locker after this start that I just made in Fort Myers against the Red Sox. And he's just a lot more happy about that. But he's definitely been a good person to deal with. It reflects, you know, everything we've talked about regarding his comfort in the clubhouse, his comfort in Pittsburgh, and, you know, all of his reasons to return to the Pirates.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, great point. If you can survive the New York media, then it goes to show that you can have a sunny disposition almost anywhere else you end up, because it is boot camp up here with this media crew. So hopefully, you know, that reflects well on how he'll be the rest of the season. So far, so good. Ivan Nova, a great clubhouse presence. And Adam, to wrap up here, of course, we are hours away from the World Baseball Classic title game between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. As I said at the top, Andrew McCutchen has had a huge hand in the U.S.'s success, especially in the win over the Dominican Republic to get to the semifinals. That huge two-run double to make it a 6-3 game after it was a 4-3 game prior to his at-bat. So he's been a clutch cutch, as we're used to him being. How into the WBC have you been, and what do you think for a prediction tonight?
I have a little bit of trouble with some of the late games in San Diego and L.A. It's a little bit past my bedtime here on the East Coast in Florida with a 5 a.m. wake-up call every morning.
Oh, yeah.
But I've watched the highlights every morning. You know, I watch as much of the early parts of the games as I can. I think the Pirates are encouraged to see what Andrew McCutchen is doing. I think they're happy to see that he's been playing some right field for Team USA. We actually had Gregory Polanco and Starling Marte report back to camp the other day. They were, of course, on either side of the double that McCutchen hit against their team. And yep. Polanco had kind of a funny remark where he said, you know, at first he was really upset about the ball that got through and, you know, it went for a double and to put Team USA further ahead. And then he was like, oh, that's Andrew McCutchen. Good for him. So that was kind of funny to hear him talk about a simultaneous competitor and teammate. I like both teams. I like what I've seen from both teams. The joy with which Puerto Rico plays is so much fun. I think maybe my favorite highlight of the entire WBC was that, the caught stealing where Molina threw to Baez, and yes. Baez was pointing back to home plate before he even tagged the guy out. I think that's such a great reflection of how much fun baseball can be. That said, I'm going to go with the hometown, home country bias and pick Team USA to win it all tonight. So, hopefully if I'm wrong, we can delete this and pretend that this prediction never happened. But I'm going to go with Team USA.
Yeah, the magic of editing, right? And like you said, I likened the Javier Baez tag to Usain Bolt celebrating about 20 yards before the finish line because he knew he had it in the bag.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I compared that to. It's been, like you said, just a complete joy to watch. And, you know, the U.S., I don't think anybody will mistake them for being a dominant team. But when it matters, when they need the big out, the big hit, the big play, they've made it in every game of this series, and hopefully that continues tonight. I think either way, we're in for a tremendous, tremendous game. It should be a raucous crowd at Dodger Stadium, and we'll see if we're celebrating in the morning. So, Adam Berry, a pleasure as always. Thank you for the time, and we will do it again at this time next week as the countdown to opening day continues. Adam Berry joining us here on the Pirates podcast. In the meantime, Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates. It is Thursday, March 23rd. The countdown to opening day continues. And joining us, as always, Mr. Adam McKelvey, our Brewers reporter. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. And I think I speak for a lot of media folks right now when I say that it is tough this time of year when spring training is winding down and you're just waiting for the regular season to begin to come up with, fresh, compelling content, because I think that from the managers to the players to the media, we all want this to kind of wrap up and we just want games to start counting. And that's not going to happen for another, week and a half, or thereabouts. So in the spirit of that, I thought we would switch things up today. And instead of just going down the news cycle, let's do some spring training superlatives, if you will, as we take a look back at some of the best and maybe worst of spring training, or just some things that have kind of stood out. And one question, Adam, that I love asking the reporters every spring is that it seems like no matter what the team, there always seems to be a bromance that develops in every spring training camp. It could be between two younger guys fighting to make the team. It could be between two veterans maybe on their last legs in the major leagues. Who knows? Or a combination of the two. So from what you've seen from this Brewers camp right now, the mix of young guys and older guys, what would you say has been the bromance that has developed so far?
Well, nothing compares to the bromance the Brewers had with Will Smith and Jeremy Jeffress that was broken up last year at the trade deadline. Two stand out. One is the Brett Phillips, Josh Hader, of course. They had the Wayne's World video that made the social media rounds. They did a really nice job on those two. Seemed pretty close. But I'll give a little more inside one that fans don't get to see or hear about that much. Every morning in camp, Taylor Youngman and Tyler Cravey, two pitchers vying for bullpen spots this year, play chess. And they usually gather a crowd. Guys kind of come around. But it's always those two playing. It's always very serious. And to tell you the truth, I don't even know who is the upper hand in this spring training series. But they have really enjoyed their chess games every morning. So that, I think, is kind of the hidden spring training bromance in Brewers camp.
Very nice. And it always seems that, something always develops. And oftentimes I hear that it develops between guys that are fighting for the same position on the roster, which you might not expect. But I guess through competition, sometimes bonds do develop. So that's always good to see. And it's good to see that the young guys are getting along swimmingly in our Brewers camp this year. Adam, as we move along here, when you talk about the minor league guys that, are always invited to major league camp, it seems like somebody always turns heads, somebody always raises eyebrows, and it doesn't have to be a real top-tier guy. It doesn't have to be a major prospect. It could be a guy that, is in the lower levels of the minor leagues, a real young guy, perhaps still a teenager, that really, comes out of nowhere and comes onto people's radar. So when you look at this entire mix, give me one guy that's really impressed people and has, surprised some people this spring.
Well, let me cheat again and give you two for the price of one, because when you say this, two guys jump right to my mind. One is Ryan Cordell, the second outfielder that the Brewers got in the trade with Texas last year. that included Lewis Brinson, who is now Milwaukee's top prospect. Brinson had a great camp. He looks like he is right there at the edge of the major leagues, and he got a lot of attention this spring. But Cordell, this second player, quietly had a really good camp. He plays all three positions. He hit for some power. He looks the part. He really, I think, impressed Craig Counsell and the coaches with being further along than Counsell thought, perhaps, that Ryan Cordell was. He's a player to really keep an eye on in a crowded position of prospects in that Brewers organization. And the other guy that comes to mind is maybe a little more under the radar. Dustin Houle is a catcher, a 2011 draft pick who has been hurt a ton in his minor league career. He joked that he knows Maryvale Baseball Park better than anybody else because he spent so much time in extended spring training and those nasty days in the summer where guys are rehabbing from injury. He was healthy in camp, his first big league camp, sort of brought over as one of those extra catchers just because you need so many guys to catch bullpens as pitchers ramp up for the season. But Houle was able to parlay that into a really impressive spring at the plate, an OPS of like 1.4, really, hit a lot of doubles, opened eyes again of Craig Counsell and those coaches. And I'll tell you, that stuff does matter. They are not going to make future roster decisions based on a guy's OPS in the Cactus League, but he is now in the back of Craig Counsell's mind as a guy who really impressed in spring with the way he played and the way he carried himself. That stuff does matter in the big picture of this game. So as Counsell said, you know, who knows what happens? This is a position of turnover in the organization with Jonathan Lucroy and Martin Maldonado now gone. And it is not out of the realm of possibility that Dustin Houle will sometime play in the big leagues. And it would be a good story given all the injuries he's endured.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you said it perfectly that, you know, you cannot assess a guy based on a one-month sample of spring training pitching. But at the very least, if you put yourself in the back of Craig Counsell's mind and the back of management's mind, then who knows? At least you're a guy that's in the conversation. You've made yourself known, and that can only pay dividends down the road. So very good on him to have the spring that he is currently having. Adam, to kind of switch gears here a little bit, we saw the other day the video that went viral a little bit of Don Mattingly willingly taking a sledgehammer to the chest with nothing but a cinder block between himself and said sledgehammer. Now, I don't think that Craig Counsell is doing anything that extreme with the Brewers this spring. At least I hope not. But in the spirit of that, what have the Brewers done to kind of break up the monotony of a spring training as the days and the nights tend to blend together with one another this time of year?
Well, look, I don't know on this one, Matt. You know, it's like everybody's out on the golf course, but that's no fun because that's true of 29 other camps around baseball in Florida and Arizona. I'm not sure that there was a big-time story for this year's team off the field, but I'll tell you, I'll just tell you mine. My way to break up the monotony in spring training is to get out and do some Phoenix hiking. There's some really great hikes here right in the city, and I think a lot of fans know about it, but fans who don't know about it, if you do a spring training visit to Arizona, you got to make this part of your plan. A couple of mountains right in the middle of the city where you get great views, and then sort of surrounding the city, you can do a lot of fun stuff. And we went out on the off day, some of the front office guys and a couple of the writers, and we did a hike up and over Camelback Mountain. And on the way down, we did see one baseball guy. We saw Carlos Sobero, the Brewers' first base coach, who had just come back from the World Baseball Classic and was out for a hike. So it's that's the way I think a lot of people like to sort of break things up a little bit in spring training when you have a chance. For the players, though, man, all I hear about is golf, golf, and more golf.
And I've got nothing against golf. It's a wonderful game, a wonderful way to unwind, but I would hope that they would come up with something a little more exciting to kind of pass the time in spring training, but, you know, to each their own. Do we have pictures of said hiking and said mountains on your Twitter accounts or anything like that?
Well, we do. The guy to look for is Mike Vassallo, the Brewers PR director, who appeared to be near perishing at many points on our hike. And I took some photos and sent one to him, and I'm shocked that he actually posted one of them. So I will take the credit for a nice group photo of us and then also a photo. If you want to see the Brewers PR director appear to be dying of dehydration, that's available to you and the entire world.
And, I mean, who wouldn't want to see that? So there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There. So, Adam, let's see here. Next on the list is, again, as we said, these games largely meaningless. We don't care about the final scores or the box scores for the most part. But for whatever reason, has one game or one performance within a game stood out to you this spring?
Well, yes, it was the Brewers 24-3 thrashing of the Seattle Mariners at Maryvale Baseball Park, which has skewed their stats so hard that, you know, the Brewers lead the Cactus League as we speak here in a lot of different offensive categories. But that's so far skewed by that one game, it makes it difficult to kind of read how they've done as a group offensively. I think it was 24 unanswered runs in the middle of that game, including a 10-run inning that began with 7 straight hits. It was just one of those days. And I asked a scout, you know, if you're scouting the Mariners on that, Mariners pitchers, what do you get from a game like that? And he looked at me and he said, you know what you do? You close the book. In other words, you don't write anything down and you sort of forget that it happened because it's just one of those days that probably won't happen again. That was a game I certainly will never forget.
Yeah, that certainly speaks to the nature of baseball, where some days everything drops in. Other days, you know, you get a pitch right down the middle, you foul it off, or you miss it completely. Brewers didn't miss many pitches that day. As like you said, they scored 24 runs, so with good reason, that is the game that certainly stands out. And, Adam, of the newcomers on this team, and there have been a few this offseason, Eric Thames for one, Travis Shaw another, just to name two of that group. The newcomer that you personally have enjoyed interacting with the most?
Well, we love Jabba Chamberlain, and his camp unfortunately came to an end this week. The Brewers decided he wasn't going to be one of the guys in their opening day bullpen. They opted, instead of waiting to the end of camp, to just tell him now, give him an opportunity to try to hook on with another team here. He was a lot of fun. He was really good for the young players. He drove this basically a semi-cab to the ballpark every day, sort of tricked out. I don't even know if you call it a car or a truck or what. It was this gigantic behemoth of a car. And he was a real character in camp, and it was sad to see him end. I'll say of the players who are going to make it to Milwaukee, the newcomer I've really enjoyed talking to is Eric Thames. A really thoughtful guy. Went to Korea, an unknown place for him. 3 years there of putting up really silly numbers. But there was a lot of pressure involved in that. And a lot of changes. I mean, it's kind of dressing at the hotel and then going to the stadium in your uniform. Just little things that challenge him along the way. He said one of the ways he kind of adapted is he did a lot of reading. Fiction, nonfiction, self-help, meditation, all kinds of different topics. And it was really interesting to talk to him about how he navigated this new experience and had success doing it. So I've really enjoyed getting to know him. He is a really interesting story on this team moving forward. And if he has success, it'll be interesting to see whether other players from the Korean baseball organization get a shot from major league teams. It's kind of a test case of, you know, how do you read those statistics and do they translate over here? And the Brewers certainly hope that they do. They're going to give him a nice long leash to play first base, and we'll see.
Yeah, we will, and it'll be interesting to see how he readapts to Major League pitching, as he is the guy that the crew is counting on to replace the 41 homers that Chris Carter had last year. He, of course, now a New York Yankee. That'll be a very interesting dynamic for 2017. Adam, to wrap up here, I had to resist the temptation to do the entire podcast about the World Baseball Classic because it's something I was really into, and I think a lot of people were as well. I want to make 2 points and to see if you agree or disagree on them, maybe just 1 point. But the U.S., obviously, a great, great title-clinching victory on Wednesday, defeating the juggernaut Puerto Rico team 8-0. But the discussion has been not so much about that result, but about the comparing and contrasting between the two styles of play, between, you know, the flair and the passion shown by not just Puerto Rico, but the Latin countries as a whole, as opposed to the more business-like demeanor exhibited by the U.S., at least, you know, up until this tournament, we saw a little more flair from the U.S. guys. But that seems to be the central discussion. And in particular, Ian Kinsler was the one guy that said, you know, he made the comments that, like, look, I think it's better that kids who are, you know, raised on the game and who want to get into the game play the game the way that we play it, as opposed to the way that it's played in the Latin countries. And I had a problem with that because, again, if you want to conduct yourself in a business-like way, more power to you. If you want to show flair and passion like the Latin countries, more power to you. What I disagree with is him saying that our way is better than their way, and that kind of struck me the wrong way. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, the answer is always somewhere in the middle. The right answer is always somewhere in the middle. And I think that you see that in the World Baseball Classic, where the flair for the game, it rubs off on some of the other teams. The U.S. team played with flair. You know, Eric Hosmer is doing the sort of the his version of the Aaron Rodgers championship belt thing that he does in Green Bay Packers games, where he does that, you know, runs his hands across the USA on his chest. That stuff's cool. I think kids like it. It shows a love for the game and that you're trying to win these charged games. So I like the flair. I like the fun. I've probably said this to you before, Matt. My favorite experience in baseball are not the World Series I've covered. It's not the All-Star games, not the postseason games. It was the first World Baseball Classic. I was lucky enough to cover the second round in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And the four teams were Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, and Cuba, when Cuba was at the, you know, really still a powerhouse internationally. It was the coolest experience for a 28-year-old at the time, you know, and no, really still had no idea what I was doing covering baseball. And to sit there in the stands, basically, because that's where the auxiliary press box was at, and soak up the atmosphere of those games from the first pitch to the last, it's really something I'll never forget. It was, you know, the tournament has changed a lot since then. I think it's gotten more, people are more serious about it now. And with the U.S. winning, I think a lot of people are right that now there are going to be more star players who get involved in this thing. I think it's going to be good for the tournament. I just think the fun of it, the flair is the right word. The flair for this international play is a very good thing. And if it's different from the Major League Baseball regular season, that's fine. That's a different grind than this short tournament. The tournament should be fun, and I think that the Puerto Rican players, the Dominican players, everybody, the U.S. players, they showed that this is a fun game and a fun tournament.
Yeah, I think the bottom line here is, it's okay to have fun. Let's leave it at that. Good points all from Adam McCalvey. Adam, thank you so much for the time. We will do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers. It is Wednesday, March 22nd, and the countdown is on to opening day 2017. We're talking Reds baseball today, and pinch hitting for Mark Sheldon is Jim Day, Reds broadcaster with Fox Sports Ohio. Jim, we certainly appreciate you taking the time on this Wednesday to talk Red spring training. And as we just discussed moments ago, I think it's that time of year where we all get a little sick and tired about hearing about, injuries and about who's winning this position battle, who's winning this roster spot. So today we're going to do a little thing called Spring Training Superlatives, a bit of a more lighthearted look at Spring Training 2017, as, like we said, opening day is just around the corner. So, Jim, I'll throw a few topics at you, and one topic that is always popular with our reporters and our broadcasters is, it seems like that every year in spring training, no matter what the team, there's always two guys, maybe more, that strike up something of a bromance, if you will, whether it's two veterans or two younger guys or whatever the case may be. Maybe they mix and match a little bit. So from your observations right now in Red spring training, who are two guys that have struck up the biggest bromance right now in training camp?
There's actually four.
Wow.
So this is an interesting bromance. And you would think that there's open rotation spots for the Reds. And you would think guys competing for those spots, human nature would say you want to have a little bit of separation. But top prospects, Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson, Amir Garrett, and Sal Romano, for the second straight year, have chosen to be roommates. And these guys, they're like boyfriend and girlfriend, all four of them, because we went over to did a story at their house, and it is just constant bickering and arguing and finishing each other's sentences and looking after each other and arguing about who's cleaning and who's not cleaning. Robert Stevenson's the clean freak, and this guy is that. And they are inseparable, and they said that they're the best of friends, and I didn't believe it. But when you go over there, you can find out that they are absolutely the best of friends and competing for the same spots. And again, you would think that there'd be a little bit of separation, But those guys are together nonstop, day and night.
That's very interesting. And like you said, for guys that are competing for the same spots on this team within this roster, it's even more striking that this friendship has developed. So that is very interesting. Jim, is it a case of three guys gang up on one because of, is there one guy that leaves too many dishes in the sink, one guy that doesn't pick up after themselves? How does that work out?
Well, Robert Stevenson admits that he is a little bit OCD on cleaning. So he will, I asked him, all right, who's the mama hen? And he immediately raised his hand, and the other three guys immediately point at him. He's big on recycling. So if they leave something in the sink or there's trash out for a little bit, he will just blast them a text. He had the day off or something, and I was around those guys, and all of a sudden Amir Garrett gets this text that Robert Stevenson is just blasting him about this trash that's been sitting there for a few days. And Amir's like, Robert, it's just trash. Well, I'll take it out when I get home. And then they all kind of gang up on Sal Romano, and they crush him about Sal says he has a bad shoe game, and the other guys are big time into shoes, so... It's interesting, and they're young guys, so they're full of energy. They're playing video games and completely arguing the whole time. So it is very, very interesting. And those four guys could all end up on the same, maybe the same rotation or at least the same team. And it's interesting that they're already the best of friends.
Yeah, that's something. And if anybody out there is listening who might work for the team on the video crew, I smell a reality show in the making here. I smell something that, we could document throughout the
right.
season. I think it would be really interesting. I know teams, do that, kind of the lighthearted, right. behind-the-scenes look at some of their, younger guys especially. So these guys would fit that bill, and that's a very interesting dynamic that relationship that's developing between four of the young arms on this Red staff. So Jim,
we went over
to
there
kind of
to do a story. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's
we went
okay.
over there to do a story for our weekly show, and we got so much material, we ended up turning it into a half-hour show. So it's kind of a reality show. I mean, it's one edition, a half hour, but the whole thing is just them.
Yeah, I see a lot of potential here with this.
Yeah.
I really do. Chronicling their off-field foibles and what they're doing on the field, of course. I do see some promise here with those four guys for sure. And, Jim, one of these four guys might be the answer to this next question, but we'll see on that. Every year it seems like there's a minor league guy, whether it's a top prospect or somebody really not on the radar, who turns some heads, who really, pitches well, hits well, does whatever well during spring training for whatever that's worth. If you had to pick one guy from that bunch who's, like I said, turned a few heads, raised a few eyebrows, who might that be?
Wow, there's really three that come to mind, but I'll give you one, and he's in that group, and it's Sal Romano.
Okay.
He was, you have Cody Reed, Garrett, and Robert Stevenson, and Tim Adelman, and maybe a couple of others that were in the first tier of group that were vying for those open rotation spots. And Sal Romano and guys like Rookie Davis were amongst a group below that because Sal doesn't have any time above AA. And this spring, man, he is just a warrior on the mound. He has impressed everyone, not only with the numbers that he's put up in the spring. And you can, it's spring training. I know you can get deceived by it. He is aggressive. He is not afraid. He comes right at guys. He has a short memory. So he, and along with Rookie Davis, who was one of the players that the Reds got in Roldis Chapman deal from the Yankees, both of those guys have elevated themselves into the next tier where they're actually – it's going to be a decision, and to me I think it's going to come down to a small market team, and they're going to want to send them to AAA to get that extra year of service time, send them down for 2 or 3 weeks. But if that wasn't in factor at all, I think Sal Romano would make this club, whether it would be in the rotation or mixing men in the bullpen. He has been that impressive, along with Rookie Davis as well, who's really made strides this spring. Manager Brian Price, one of the pitching gurus, has even said for the first time, Rookie Davis looks like a major league pitcher. He's added a really nasty slider to his repertoire. So those two would come to mind, as well as a guy that people might not have heard of at all, Barrett Aston, who a few years back was a player to be named later in the Jonathan Broxton deal with the Brewers. And all of a sudden, this kid is like in the sentence to maybe make the club in the bullpen. He has been mighty impressive. So almost coming out of nowhere would be Barrett Aston, but the other two have really elevated themselves as well.
Yeah, and like you said, you can get fooled by looking at the numbers, you know, in spring training because, again, you take everything with a grain of salt. But like you said, it's more the makeup and the demeanor and the attitude that resonate more than anything you've seen in a box score this time of year. So three guys right there that you can certainly keep an eye on. Jim, transitioning here, we saw the other day, I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, that Don Mattingly, whether, you know, through a bets or a dare or something, volunteered himself to have a sledgehammer crushed upon his chest with a cinder block on top just to prove he could do it, I guess, and he did. So good for you, Don. But in light of that, I would guess that, you know, teams have activities or moments that you need to break up the monotony of spring training. So I don't think the Reds have done anything quite that drastic. I don't think Brian Price has come anywhere near a sledgehammer these last few weeks. But nonetheless, what have the Reds done to kind of break up the day-to-day mundane monotonous of spring training?
Well, a guy that's back in camp is that now 40 years of age, Bronson Arroyo, who himself is just a character. I mean, he's one of my favorite guys that I've ever covered. So some mornings, we'll look at the schedule each day. We come in and we'll do, you know, stretching at this time, meeting at this time. And then one day we came in and it said at, you know, 9:30 a.m., story time with Bronson. And like, what is that? And we're not allowed in these meetings. These are private team meetings. But you can just hear belly laughs in there when they've had story times. And talking to Bronson about it, he won't tell you exactly what they are. But they're mixed with humor, things he's gone through. But he also wants to teach these young guys a lesson in it. So each morning or whenever, they don't do it each morning, but whenever they do it, they break up the monotony with Bronson Arroyo story time. And it's just belly laughs in there.
Could you get anybody to divulge maybe once the season begins what exactly story time entails, or is that a well-kept secret?
It is a well-kept secret, and to be honest with you, even if I knew, I wouldn't. I would. It would be told to me off the record.
Got it.
And I wouldn't be able to divulge. I do have an idea about one of them. I've been around Bronson for a long time, but I just can't. I can't breach that.
Yeah, you gotta. You gotta protect. You know, protect the shield, so to speak. Protect the team in this case. Hopefully,
write a book one day.
Yeah, hopefully one day we'll find out what story time with Bronson entails, and if it's G-rated, maybe we share it, but that's for another time, certainly. Jim, we'll move on here. You know, again, spring training games can get rather mundane if, you know, by the fifth or sixth inning, there's, you know, guys in there that even the most ardent fans have never heard of, but for whatever reason, pick one game this spring that stands out to you for whatever reason.
Oh, wow. Well, if you just want to go with the mundane of, you know, they were early in camp. They were, I don't even remember what day it was. The days bleed together at this point. This has been the longest spring training ever. and I've been out here in Arizona since February 10th, so I'm about almost able to vote here in Arizona. There was a game where they were down big time, and they rallied for 8 runs in the bottom of the 8th, I think, in the home game, and came back and won the game, in which the game I even left. I'm like, I don't, you know, I'm done with this. So, and it kind of laid the stage for, you know, one thing you're looking for in spring training is the starters are going to do their thing. They're going to play their innings, and some guys are working on things. Other guys are just looking at pitches, so you really can't. Especially hitters, you just really can't take anything from spring training. But the second tier of guys that come in, the ones that are battling for spots or battling to improve their stock in the minor leagues, you can really take stock in how they play. And this second tier group of guys have just been battlers, man. They're enthusiastic, and they have scored a ton of runs. The games that the Reds have won this spring have all been mostly because of these second-tier guys. And it seems to be on a daily basis where they're just knocking the ball all over the place. So it kind of set the stage for that. So they're going to have decisions to make as far as who makes the bench, because everyone, all those guys are really playing well. And again, it's spring training. You know, you take it with a grain of salt, as you said, but they're at least playing hard and playing with enthusiasm, which I love to see.
Yeah, and even, you know, the veterans who have, you know, been there, done that for many years at this point, you kind of need that infusion of youth and enthusiasm to kind of keep your sanity. So it's a win all around for the young guys and for the veteran guys, too, to see that excitement on the field day in and day out. Jim, as we close things out here, of course, as we speak on this Wednesday afternoon, we're hours away from the championship game of the World Baseball Classic, which, in my opinion, has been wonderful, not just because the U.S. is in the title game, but all the way around we've seen some great baseball. Give me a prediction for tonight, and how invested have you been in the World Baseball Classic?
You know, I was a guy – I've been turned this year. I was a guy that didn't care much about it. I wish they would have invested the money in growing the game here in the States. And it's obviously been much bigger in other countries, particularly the Latin countries, and even in Japan. I mean, it's huge for those countries. And it's been kind of ho-hum, whatever, here in the United States. It's really grown on me this year. I don't know if it's because of a lot more frontline players are on Team USA. And I've sensed it throughout talking to some of the players in spring that, you know, the next time the WBC comes around, there's not going to be as many guys turning it down, I don't think. I think that they would be really excited about playing in it. I love the enthusiasm during these games. And I know it's 162 games in the major league season. You can't show emotion like that all the time, but it drives me nuts that you're going to offend someone if you hit a big home run, a pitcher makes a big strikeout to get out of a jam, and someone's going to take one in the ribs because you showed some emotion. I mean, sports is about emotion. You got to play it with emotion, and I just can't stand the robot sometimes. In Major League Baseball, I love the enthusiasm that's shown in the WBC. Now, you don't want to show guys up. You don't want to showboat. And there would be guys that would take it too far. But I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed it. And it's not just because the U.S. doing well. I mean, I've enjoyed the games that haven't involved the United States team. So I've been turned. I'm now very much into it. So I think the U.S. is there. You know, I looked at one of the box scores. Andrew McCutchen's hitting eighth. That's a pretty good team.
Yeah, I agree. So, a lot of talent all up and down, and I'm totally with you. I was a little bit lukewarm about the WBC heading into this year, but I've been glued to it. And like you said, not just the U.S. games, the games involving, you know, the DR before they got knocked out, Puerto Rico, Japan, Netherlands, Israel, what a great story they were. So it's been wonderful. And to your point about showing enthusiasm, I remember the other night in the first semifinal, Vladimir Ballantyne from the Netherlands knew that he got one, a two-run homer to put them up early, and he, you know, pounding his chest and throwing the bat, and again, not showing up the pitcher, simply a display of emotion to his teammates, not towards the opponent.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And
no, nothing at all.
Yeah, there was no retaliation.
Fans get excited about it. You know, baseball's a sport, unlike football, where you got a helmet on, you can market these guys. Just because people, you know, like the characters of the game, they like emotion. They like, I mean, I just don't understand why you're not allowed to show more emotion in Major League Baseball. And I really think it would help the game. And now, it, you know, kids are dabbing and doing all this other stuff. It's just, you know what? I just think times have changed. And I really wish that they would look at the WBC and say, hey, you know, it's all right. I don't have to hit a home run and put my head down and jog around the bases like I'm a robot.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe having this event and the success of it this year will start some sort of shift with player attitudes, or, you know, players display their emotions on the field. It won't happen overnight, but maybe a slow culture change with the way that players, you know, play the game and display their emotions. And like you said, there is a line that can be crossed. And if that line is crossed, then okay. But if that line isn't crossed and you're merely just exhibiting your own joy, of the game and succeeding at the game, then there's nothing wrong with that. And we should see a lot of that emotion on both benches tonight when the U.S. plays Puerto Rico to be crowned the 2017 World Baseball Classic champion. So, Jim Day, this has been a pleasure. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
I said dab. Is that right?
I think it's dab. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure. I don't even know, but I think you got my point.
Yeah, I think that is the correct term.
Like, it's not dab, idiot.
No, I don't think anybody will call you out on that one. Pretty sure it's dabbing. You got it. Jim, this has been a pleasure. So thank you so much. As Jim Day filling in this week for Mark Sheldon. Jim, hopefully we will chat again at some point during the season. And I wish you success for the Reds this year and success on Fox Sports Ohio. So thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure.
All right, thank you. Jim Day once again joining us. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds. Cubs podcast today with Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter. Kerry, thank you so much for the time. Kerry, with spring training winding down, I want to do some spring training superlatives with you to kind of break up the monotony as we count down towards opening day. Kerry, I asked this question to you last year, and I distinctly remember your answer about the biggest spring training bromance that the Cubs had. It was John Lackey and John Lester. What about this year? What bromance is brewing in Cubs camp right now?
Well, I think the biggest one that we saw was when Hector Rondon had to leave to play for pitch for Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. Rondon and Pedro Strop are very tight, and I think the Cubs coaches recognized that Pedro was sort of missing his buddy. So every morning during practice, the coaches would come over and give Pedro a hug while Rondon was away with Venezuela. So Lester and Lackey, we've kind of gotten used to, so that's not as obvious. But Strope and Rondon are very tight, and it was obvious that Rondon missed this guy, that Pedro missed this guy, but Rondon missed him too.
Absolutely, and absence makes the heart grow fonder, as the saying goes, and a good display of that right there. Kerry, when you look at the minor leaguers in Cubs camp right now, you know, whether it's a top prospect like an Ian Happ or an Eloy Jimenez, or maybe a guy not on people's radars, a guy in the lower levels of the minors, give me one guy or maybe two that's really raised some eyebrows and turned some heads this spring.
I think Ian Happ is the guy because they've still got him in camp. They've made a series of roster cuts, and rather than send him down to the minors, he's stuck around. Now, part of that could be that Ben Zobrist hasn't been available because of a stiff neck, but Happ has really opened some eyes, and Madden, you know, has made it clear that Happ will open the season in the minors, but they really wanted to get a good look at this kid to see what he could do, and he's been impressive.
Yeah, he certainly has, along with Jimenez, and two more reasons for Cubs fans to get excited, as if they don't have enough reasons right now, to say the very least. Kerry, definitely curious to get your answer for this one, given Joe Madden and his nature of thinking outside the box. But of all the off-field activities that the Cubs have had, most of them spearheaded by Joe Madden, what has been the most memorable or coolest one in your eyes?
Well, to be honest, it's been a very tame spring compared to the last 2 years. And really, Joe hasn't done much at all. It's been strength coach Tim Buss who's been behind the activities. And that's really been more costume changes than anything else. We haven't had the Wild Bear Cubs. We haven't had, you know, mimes. We haven't had a band out there. I think maybe, you know, there isn't that much time left either, and they're headed to Las Vegas for the weekend for split squad games. So, to be perfectly honest, it's been kind of tame. I've talked to Davey Martinez about that. He claims that they're going to pick it up, but I'm not sure when.
Yeah, well, I think coming off the historic championship of last fall and all the offseason hoopla that went with it, maybe a tame camp is exactly what the world champions needed, so good for them. Kerry, of course, the games tend to blend together, you know, especially this time of the spring, and it's hard for one to really stick out. But has one game stuck out to you for whatever reason, or perhaps an individual performance within a spring training game right now?
Again, you know, Ian Happ has been pretty impressive watching him. I've kind of enjoyed the exhibition games against Italy and Japan that they played, especially the Italy game, only because John Andreoli, who is a Cubs minor league prospect, was playing for Italy, and he had a really good game here at in Mesa, hitting a home run. So that was probably the most memorable, just to see how much fun he was having in preparation for the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, Andrew Ely had that dramatic walk-off two-run single against Mexico. In Mexico, of all places, that was certainly a memorable moment from the just-concluded 2017 World Baseball Classic. And, Kerry, some newcomers on this Cubs team. Of that group, which one of you enjoyed interacting with the most?
Well, it's been Coachy's been kind of interesting because after his outings, he goes down and he does the high fives in the dugout to everybody. And I asked him after his last outing if because he was a little more exuberant in his last outing. And I said, is that what we can expect? And he said, no. He says, I haven't seen anything yet. So I'm not sure what that means, except if he has a good outing, look out in the Cubs dugout because he's going to be giving high fives to just about everybody and anybody within reach.
Yeah, I think if anybody ends up on the DL with a sprained wrist, we're going to know who the culprit is because he certainly had a few of those during his tenure with the Red Sox. It should be a great addition to the Cubs here in 2017. Kerry, we cannot let you go before we get your feedback on David Ross's Dancing with the Stars debut. It got a lot of rave reviews. How did that go over in the clubhouse?
Now, the clubhouse, the players were very excited. I think most of them were just kind of dazzled at the fact that Ross was able to do that. It's not something that anyone is used to seeing. I mean, to be perfectly honest, when we've seen him dance, it's usually just bouncing up and down or doing, you know, sort of clapping his hands to a country song. For him to get all dressed up like that and not trip was really very impressive. So I'm told that the next timeout, it will not be quite as Cubs themed. This was the first one was more of like an introductory type thing. So I think that's why he had the sequins on his Cubs uni, which was a little bit of a shocker. But for somebody to be able to dance to Go Cubs Go like that, I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, I think everybody does. Everybody was very impressed. And maybe he brings another world title, if you will, to Chicago within the next few weeks here. Kerry, we appreciate it. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Chicago Cubs.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.